This is Ros Atkins from World Have Your Say. On Tuesday, Americans will decide between Barack Obama and Mitt Romney. And even the president acknowledges that the US economy has had a tough 4 years. He'd also argue he's introduced economic policies that have worked in some cases and will work in others. Needless to say, Mitt Romney doesn't agree. And while other factors will dictate the direction of some votes, the man who Americans trust to guide the economy from January on will surely win this election. To try and understand the state of some of America's most famous industries and how things are for those who work within them, World Have Your Say set off on a journey which began in Ohio and ended in Pennsylvania. And I have to tell you, we didn't take the direct route. We met actors and soldiers and lathe operators and office managers, just to mention a few, and asked them all, is America working? Let's start with a farmer who lives just outside Cleveland.
Well, hi, everyone. This is Dave Russell with the Brownfield Ag Network, and it is my pleasure to help Ross to start a series of programs where World Have Your Say explores if America is working. And today we're at the Skip Jones Turkey Farm in Northeast Ohio. Skip, nice place.
Thank you, Dave, and welcome to everyone. Look around. This farm was built in 1887, was started. It was finished in 1901, but the actual building was started in 1887.
And that goes back to your...
That would be when my great-grandfather bought the property then. And if you look around and look at the beams, all of this was done by hand. They didn't turn on the electric saw. Everybody, they carried this in, a horse and wagon, and they just literally did this all by hand.
Well, in fact, I noticed some hand tools hanging back here behind me.
There are some original tools. Not many, but there are original. Actually, the original hook that my grandfather had to catch the turkeys is still here.
What a great story. Well, we're here to look at the state of American agriculture. Let me ask, how's it going?
My name is Kim Davis, and I reside in Carroll County on the eastern side of the state, and my family resides on a commercial cow-calf operation, and it's certainly been extremely dry this summer, and we compound that with the fact that it was dry last year as well. And so in our neck of the woods, so to speak, we're very, very short on hay. We ran out of pasture early on, and on our operation, we like to intensive graze our cattle around our hills, and just because of that lack of rain, I mean, we had to sacrifice some paddocks. So we'll be suffering, I think, from the ramifications of that here, you know, this winter as we get into feeding hay, but I think we'll be okay. Cattle prices look good, and we're excited to be involved in agriculture.
Yes, this is Joe Logan with the Farmers Union. I farm over in the eastern corner of the state, and Ohio is just on the eastern edge of the great drought that kind of hit the Midwest this year. And as you said, I think most farmers, if they have gotten out in the field to begin harvest, have been pleasantly surprised that they're actually having a reasonably good yield. As has been mentioned before, prices are really up in the stratosphere. We're at all-time high prices for corn and soy, those sorts of universal commodities, and that is going to keep farmers in good shape this year. And frankly, most farmers nationally have had a very good last several years.
Hi, I'm Jeannie Wolf. I'm a journalist here in Los Angeles, or I suppose I better say Hollywood. Welcome to World Have Your Say. It's very good to be talking with you. We're all on a beautiful roof terrace of a hotel called the Andaz Hotel, which used to be a Hyatt where naughty bands like Van Halen would throw chairs and beds out of the window, and it was just regular form to trash rooms. Up the street a bit is the real Sunset Strip, where everyone from Bruce Springsteen to Justin Bieber has gotten their start in Hollywood. So it's like, the only thing I can tell you for sure is it's like no place else.
Hi, Siafa in Liberia posts on Facebook, in the midst of unemployment, how are these actors coping with life? My name is Maida Valentik. I work in production. I'm not an actor, but I can tell you my unemployed actor friends say that they think of auditioning as their job, not acting. So they just keep doing it, and I applaud them for it.
There's a perception, I think, among our listeners, because they see Los Angeles churning out TV series all the time, movies all the time, that things must be rosy here, even though the rest of the country is feeling the pinch. Has the economic downturn reached as far as the West Coast?
This is Paul Edelstein again. All I know is that it's a very strange industry. It's always been a strange industry. Hollywood has always created the most content in the world, and probably always will. the numbers are greater, the money is greater. There's probably also more people that want to do it. So you're still talking about in the Screen Actors Guild, where 4% of the Screen Actors Guild, 3% of the Screen Actors Guild makes a living as an actor. So you're talking about a very, very small percentage. I think that, just like Maggie was talking about, and this is true in the music world too, of course, there's more content, and because of digital technologies, there are ways to make good content, but there's so much more content. So the question is, of course, in terms of just making a living, probably it's harder to make a dollar, but it's probably easier to be on a television series, if it's a web series, or in a short, if it's a digital short, or to make a record, if it's a digital record that you made at home, things that you literally could not do 10, 15 years ago.
The one thing, I totally agree that things haven't changed so much, that if you're desirable, they'll throw money at you, they'll throw cars at you, anything you want, and you have to get to that place. And even now, if you've got a hit movie, you can get anything you want. The economy has affected things here in the most peculiar way. This is Hollywood, everything's more extreme. So on the low end, if you own a sandwich shop across from a studio where you used to deliver lunch every day to a crew that's been fired, you're not doing so well. If you're Ashton Kutcher, you're getting paid something like $1 million an episode. If you're on a show like Modern Family, you're striking for a bigger salary when you're already making more than the whole Harrods underwear department would make for Sofia Vergara. So it's very peculiar, very inconsistent, but people aren't dreaming here of making a living. They're dreaming here of making a hit.
Just in case you guys have just tuned in, I'm Earl. World, Have Your Say is broadcasting live from my truck in Ontario, California.
We talked about the practicalities of the trucking industry, but we're also talking about the election as we travel around the country. And I wonder, just across the way, there's an area outside where you can smoke and some of the guys are playing chess and drinking a coffee or a barbecue. Coke and have a barbecue. Are you talking about politics as well?
This is Earl. I myself just throw my 2 cents in, because about all I got left after I gave my ex-wife all my money. I don't get involved in politics. I think our economy has been on a down spiral for a long time, and I think it's going to take a lot more than Mitt Romney or Obama. I have no political views, but I'm sure some of the other drivers do.
Yeah, I think people are talking about it. That's one of the things I've found kind of interesting in this country the last few years. I don't know when we started wearing it on our sleeve. I still, you know, appreciate the privacy of going into the booth and casting your ballot. But, you know, of course, it's being talked about. But I don't think that, you know, it's going to have a whole big effect on our industry, because, you know, our industry is pretty resilient. You know, we're a lot like the American worker. We're the backbone of this country, and we've had things going on in our industry like fuel costs and hours of service, things that have been going on for years that I don't think are going to be affected by this election.
But presumably the better the economy is doing, the more money people have, the more things they buy, and the more produce you have to move around the country. Is that how it works?
Well, yes and no, but, you know, you got to remember, a lot of us haul stuff that people actually have to have. You know, like
they're buying
haul
stuff
produce.
That they need, food, medical supplies, clothes. That's steady. It's not going to stop. People are already going to change clothes.
Yeah, people
always
going
to have to eat. People are always going to have to shower, take baths, so that stuff is going to go.
It's funny you say people have to eat. We started this series of programs exploring if America is working on a turkey farm in Northeast Ohio, and the farmers were saying just the same to us. They're saying it hasn't been too bad because people still need to buy food.
Yeah. Exactly.
That's one of the things I've always appreciated about our industry. You know, when I go out and talk to people, that, you know, I tell them the only thing that wasn't delivered to you by a truck is a baby. You know, people depend on us, and, you know, we're always going to be there.
Okay, we've got a question from Simon in Nigeria. Actually, it's more of a statement. He says, if you asked me, I would say America is spending too much on the military. Do you guys agree?
I actually do agree. This is Lisa, and I'm the spouse of an Air Force guy. And I see it from the civilian perspective when I watch them come in. And I'm not a politician. I don't know how it's all run. And I know there's a lot of red tape that goes with it. But in terms of just saving money, they could get rid of contracts and the way they do them, I've seen some of the most outrageous waste of money on just bases, where they'll put in multi-million dollar technological advances to the building that they know is going to be torn down in a year, and their reason behind that is, well, the contract was already sent out. And I cannot wrap my head around that. Millions of dollars. They knew the base that we're on is going to be slowly taken apart and turned into something else, and some of the barracks that they could have given to vets, to homeless vets to live in, are just being torn down. And they're remodeling the commissary, where it's going to be torn down within the next 5 years. So that alone, they could take that money and give it as a higher paycheck to the soldiers than to waste money on things like that.
Yeah, honestly, this is Steven. In my opinion, I would say the fraud, waste, and abuse starts from the top and works its way down. People keep treating the Department of Defense's budget like it's the sacred cow, and it's really not. I mean, there's a lot of wasted money, and it can be better directed elsewhere. So,
I think the correct number is, the correct number is about $1 trillion so far that we've spent on the wars. And I think that's the biggest elephant in the room when we talk about budgeting or America being broke and jobless. You know, we need to mention this war and how much it's taking. I mean, if we split it in half, we could save a lot of new jobs and create jobs as well.
From California, we traveled to Scranton, Pennsylvania, which is known for a few things, including being the home of the American TV series, The Office.
Recognize this music, Pat?
I believe that's from The Office. Scranton, Pennsylvania.
Well, we are live in Scranton, Pennsylvania with Pat and a number of other people from his business. You can send in questions about white-collar work in the U.S. economy during the Obama years at facebook.com/worldhaveyoursay.
We are blessed. We are very happy with the way our economy... We are probably going to have one of the strongest quarters in our career, and we're right in the middle of that. I can't say that the first quarter of the next year is going to be that way, but right now we're gonna sit back and enjoy this one.
I think in Scranton we're lucky because we don't really get the highs and the lows that other people do. It kind of, things affect us a little bit more slowly here.
Statistics are a useful way of understanding the U.S. economy. The latest monthly figures have shown unemployment falling and GDP growing. Some of the months before, though, have not. And it's indisputable that the U.S. economy has been suffering in recent times. That's the view on a national scale. But what about if we zero in on individuals' experiences and the impact the downturn has had?
Dwight in Tennessee, who's been a longtime contributor to World Have Your Say, says, I've worked in a white-collar business as a draftsman and an IT manager. I saw the economic downturn in 2002 when we saw construction take a hit. I remember how many people felt frustrated and even angry as they were getting hours, benefits, and raises cut, and they were being laid off. I mean, let me be blunt about this. Have you had to cut wages here at one point? Have you had to change the terms by which you're employed?
Actually, currently, if anyone out there is interested, we are looking for another salesperson in the Scranton market. Forward your interest to myself. Again, this is David, and you know, talk to Ross. I'm sure he'll get you my information.
Well, actually, we did. Back in, I believe it was 2011, we temporarily had laid, we have 85 employees, we temporarily laid two of them off because we were feeling one of those bumps in the road. We promised that if it picked up again, we'd hire them back, and we did later in the fall. So, you know, it hasn't been the steady raises every year. I think we're in the middle of a wage freeze this year. But we're trying to make sure that we have a solid company that's going to you know, withstand the test of time over the long run.
Skip Jones here. A year and a half ago, I literally begged two 16-year-olds to come over here and just help me put up hay. Now, this is small, so I mean, we're only talking 500-600 bales of hay, not thousands of bales, just 500 or 600. 3 hours work. Literally begged them. And one person showed up, and that was me. I put 15 bales in my mow, and I'd walk up the mow, put them away. They wouldn't even come over. And I said, as soon as you're done, I'll pay you in cash. You know, it's 3 hours work. Wouldn't even come over.
Mike Biscuit from Greenkeepers Lawn Service and Landscaping. And kind of to echo what everybody said so far, as we were talking earlier before we went on the air, somebody posed a question whether or not we love what we do, and it is. Everybody sitting here, everybody who owns a business, you obviously have the passion and love for it. But to get the we'll call them kids now, the generation to try to to put their time in and do the work, it's really, really difficult because most of them have been, you know, they're entitled to what they get. Their parents have given them everything. They haven't had to work hard to get, you know, to get things, and it makes it tough as a business owner to try to instill that into them and try, you know, them, if they're only going to be around for who knows how long, especially in our field with summer help, you know, it makes it really tough to get those key guys in there and keep them and get them to work.
If you just tuned in, you're listening to some of World Have Your Say's journey around the US, where we explored if America is working. Now, from farmers in Ohio, we're turning to a factory in Chicago.
Last year, we experienced a growth where we hired about 60 individuals, and let me tell you, that was quite challenging because in today's world, it's not like you're going to walk out into the street. Even though there's such a high unemployment rate right now, you can't just go out there and find anyone that's going to come up and say, I'm looking for a job. The type of workforce that we look for is very specific because they are quite heavily and highly a skilled workforce. They need to be able to come into the shop floor and, you know, work on these machines and have a great knowledge of the computer specific language that is run on these machines, and also be able to have a smart mechanical aptitude, which doesn't come around often nowadays.
I have to say though that I'm struck that 5 days ago I was sitting at a turkey farm and being told by farmers in Ohio that they couldn't find the people they needed to do various jobs, and now I'm sitting in a factory on the outskirts of Chicago, and for different reasons you're telling me the same thing. And when I think about the unemployment figures we hear about every month from the United States, that seems like a strange state of affairs. I mean, so you were saying a little while ago you were out of work, but presumably you got work because you've got the skills.
Yeah, I already had a number of years of experience in the industry, so it was an easier transition for me than to try to bring somebody fresh in. But I, you know, in America, I think we've always had a history of Americans like to help other Americans out when they're in need. You know, we're strong in our charitable giving and that sort of thing. And I think when you asked about, you know, whose responsibility is it, you know, to train the upcoming workforce, I think that's just part of being American, you know, that we don't mind reaching out, and the owners of our companies don't mind reaching out to the community to help train that workforce.
And during this program in the Acme factory, we actually received a number of emails from young Americans who are listening saying they do want to work, but they're struggling to get the experience they need to land full-time employment. And staying with that issue of getting jobs, when I was talking with former servicemen and women in California, I wondered if there was a stigma with being a veteran that got in the way of employers taking them on.
It kind of can go both ways because I think a lot of people recognize the sacrifice, they recognize the kind of non-tangible personal attributes that you bring, you know, leadership and dedication, all that kind of stuff. But at the same time, I think a lot of people still view you as kind of possibly unhinged, or, you know, especially guys that have been in for a long time and they've worked themselves up to a position of leadership and they have to come back into the civilian workforce and take a lower responsible job, and they're kind of not used to being put in that situation.
Yeah, I think, you know, this is Matt again, I think it definitely depends on the career you intend to get into and what your background is, but I think a lot of these companies, they're either run by former veterans or there's veterans working for them, and I think they tend to believe, and there's a lot of resources out there for veterans too to get jobs, but I think these companies tend to believe that if they get somebody that was formerly in the military, they most likely they're going to get somebody that's going to work harder, they're going to have more leadership experience, they're going to have more of a background than even a kid coming right out of college with no real world work experience. So I think it pays off for the employer in the long run. And I know they're out there hiring veterans.
The reasons for the downturn in the U.S. economy are many, with the subprime mortgage crisis often cited as its beginning. Arguably, though, the longer term problem has been the impact of cheap labor and facilities in the developing world. America's manufacturing sector has been eroded, and increasingly made in America has become made in China.
Long term, my vision of how things will be in America is that the manufacturing will come close to the customer. Ease and speed of getting products will be the driving factor, and therefore manufacturing will continue to increase. It may employ fewer people than it has in the past because we've become more and more productive with the technology.
Do all of you agree with that, or in your more candid moments in the canteen, do you actually worry that
in the end, factories like this will struggle to exist?
No, I totally agree with Guy. I think that maybe in the past we maybe let our manufacturing slide a little bit, but I think Americans understand now how critically important manufacturing is for our economy. And I think that across the board, American companies are going to step up to the plate, innovate, and bring more highly skilled jobs to the country.
Facebook.com/worldhaveyoursay is where to go if you'd like to leave a question for our guests here at a machining factory in Chicago. Roy in Virginia wants to say to you, step into any big box retailer here in the US and just try and find a product that was made in America. Made in America is a thing of the past.
Well, I mean, definitely if you walk into one of the big box stores, you see a lot of products that are made in a country other than the United States. I mean, you have a lot of people that feel differently. I think certain types of products that you see at these stores, you see come a lot from other countries. But for the product we're providing, I think we probably provide the best value for our customer. I think it's a quality product.
I do think sometimes we're our own worst enemies. You know, we complain that, jobs have gone overseas. But what do? When we want to buy something cheap, we run to, the big box stores, and we buy these products that are made in China because they're the cheapest. And so I think, to be honest with ourselves, sometimes, we contribute to the problem.
Some of you have alluded to the fact that some productions are shifting to China. I read a very interesting statistic the other day that Looper, a big budget movie that's come out recently, made more in China in its first weekend than it did in America. And the reason was the Chinese said, hey, don't film it in Paris, come to Shanghai, we'll call it a co-production, and if it's billed as a co-production, it's able to be distributed in China in a way that a completely American-made film is not allowed to be. There's now talk of James Cameron trying to make a film there as a co-production. I just wonder, when you read about those kind of developments, whether it sends a shiver down the spine of all of you who live here in LA.
This is made of Valentic. Not at all. I feel like there's an incredible opportunity for U.S.-based productions to go international and bring in the audience to then bring in more money to fund more productions. The Dark Knight, shot in 7 different countries and Los Angeles for something like 5 months, employed about 100 of my friends. And Looper was a content-specific piece that took advantage of a great financial situation, and I think that that's a win.
Should it be? Can I speak to one thing really quickly that I think Jeannie touched on, and that I think we have to be careful of, and to our listeners in particular, when you think about Hollywood and you hear Hollywood has changed and it's become this. Hollywood's becoming this. Hollywood used to be this. Hollywood is sand. It's always been sand. And if we could go back and get a similar group of people in 1950, they would be saying, well, 10 years ago, it didn't work like this. Things are changing.
Stay with World Have Your Say for more from our series, Is America Working?
BBC.
I was not too young, remember? I was not too young to see a dreadful thing like that and never forget it.
What does it feel like to be at the epicenter of history as it happens?
Looking back on it, I'll never forget it.
Witness from the BBC presents powerful first-hand accounts from the moments that shape the world we live in.
Everything was happening at the same time. There's freedom movements, the women's movement, the gay movement, various ethnic movements, etc., were all exploding at the same time. The whole place was combustible with energy.
I looked back and I saw that ship break in half, and after that came the worst sound of the whole disaster, which was the sound of people drowning. And that's something that no one can hear and ever forget.
Stories from history, recalled by the people that lived them. Witness, on radio, on your mobile, and online, from the BBC World Service.
This is Ros Atkins from World Have Your Say. We're spending the hour listening to some of the people we met during the 3 weeks we've just spent in the United States. We wanted to hear from workers in a range of industries about how they found the Obama years and whether they want 4 more of them. After the BBC News, office workers in Pennsylvania, soldiers in California, and farmers in Ohio will give us their perspectives.
BBC News with David Austin. President Obama and his Republican rival Mitt Romney have been addressing large rallies across the United States as the campaign for the presidency enters its final stretch. Opinion polls put the two candidates neck and neck, but with Mr. Obama holding a slight advantage in the battleground states. The governor of New York has urged residents not to panic in the face of continuing shortages of fuel and power, 5 days after Storm Sandy struck the coast. The governor, Andrew Cuomo, said patience and community spirit were needed. Petrol rationing has begun in parts of New Jersey. A battle between Syrian rebels and government forces has raged all day around a strategically important military airbase in the north of the country. The rebel attack on the Taftanaz base is aimed at restricting the government's increasing use of air power. A prominent human rights activist in Bahrain is reported to have been detained for defying a ban on protests. The leader of the Bahrain Centre for Human Rights, Yusuf Al-Mufada, was taken into custody after attending a demonstration on Friday. Reports from Egypt say that two policemen and one soldier have been shot dead in northern Sinai, which has seen increased unrest since the fall of President Mubarak last year. Police sources have blamed Islamist militants. The Burmese opposition leader Aung San Suu Kyi has urged tolerance in response to ethnic violence that's forced tens of thousands of Muslim Rohingyas to flee their homes in the west of the country. She told the BBC she would not misuse her moral leadership to promote the cause of the Rohingyas. The most senior Roman Catholic cleric in France has denounced the government's plan to legalise same-sex marriage. The Archbishop of Paris, André Vingt-Trois, said the proposal could profoundly affect the balance of French society. He urged people to join protest marches. BBC News.
Hello, this is Ros Atkins from World Have Your Say. When we began our recent time in the US, we set ourselves three broad goals: to get health checks on some of America's best known professions, to look at the election through the eyes of those who work within them, and also to hear about the day-to-day reality of working in America. And when I looked through the messages that you were sending in for our guests, it was the latter that you had the most questions about. It seems the fascination with the American experience remains.
Well, I'm not sure how many of you guys have been in a big American truck before, but what do you think, Herb? Think we should describe our truck for them and tell them what we got in here?
DVD, laptop,
refrigerator,
TV,
you
know, coffee maker, TV, all the norms in a house, if you would, you know, you'd call it a home,
yeah,
a small home.
Yeah, we got, you know, we got our cleaning supplies and we got everything else we need, and you know, vacuum cleaners and.
You just don't have a loo in here, though. That's the problem.
Well, some of the big American trucks do have loos, though. They have bathrooms and showers
and everything.
There's one right next to us that does.
Yeah, there's one part right next to us. It's got a bathroom and a shower and a recliner and stuff in it. And you know, a lot of those people that get in those trucks, they live in them trucks for 15, 20 years, and they retire as husband and wife's teams, and you know, they'll retire millionaires. And it's basically our home in here. This is where we live at. This is our life for, you know, 8-10 weeks at a time.
Daddy in Gambia posted on Facebook, how have our mobile jobs affected our family lives? How do we consider ourselves good fathers and husbands?
Well, as for me, I got a 12-year-old daughter who's in Hiram, Utah. I got a 26-year-old son who lives in Missouri and a 32-year-old daughter who lives in Ohio. And actually with the truck in, I get to see him quite a bit because I go through there a lot. But I only get to see my daughter about once every month, and it's rough. It's real rough out here sometimes. I have no other family, but you miss them a lot.
It's good to have family where you travel. Sometimes things happen and you're not able to get there, and I think a phone or you know,
laptop
or you, any way of communication is good to keep in touch with your family, because Lord knows I got four kids, one 23, one 19, one 18, and one 11, and I'm constantly on the phone or on my Facebook or something, talking to
yes,
one of
you
them.
Are.
You know, they're constantly on my case about when are you coming home? Can you send me this? Number of things, you know, it just don't never stop. You know, once your family, you know.
Yeah, it's not many team drivers where you get a stop and both of you get asleep and you wake up at 3 o'clock in the morning, you hear your co-driver down there, hi, good morning, honey, how are you? And you think, is he talking to me? And you realize, no, he's on the phone with his wife. And it's 3 o'clock in the morning, Herb. But it's really good, though, because I do see Herb, and his family life is really great. I met his family, and I've spent time with his family, and they're great people, and they support him out here.
I think that's one of those things that, you know, it doesn't make our industry different than any other industry. It's a difficult balance between being a good parent and being a good employee for your company. So it's something that we struggle with. But I think the time that we do spend at home, it makes it even more bittersweet. We try to make the most of every minute that we have with our families.
Yeah, it means that much more.
But also, you know, taking all the time that you get at home and spending it with your wife and your kids and just trying to be a good father while you're around, not only then makes a difference, but also, you know, just being there emotionally supporting them on the phone and stuff like that makes a big difference.
And it's good to know you can provide, too. I mean, especially with the economy, it's been all over the place recently. And I mean, as long as there is such a thing as America, there will be truckers. So it's good to know that you have that stability and you can make that money and provide.
Yeah, just in case you guys just tuned in, I'm Earl. World Have Your Say is broadcasting from a truck, which is a little unusual for us, and this is a nice spot. We're sitting in Ontario, California, and it's a clear, beautiful day out here, and we're surrounded by mountains. There's no trees, it's just all mountains. And we get to watch the big jets land in Ontario Airport, but it's a really nice spot, and there's a lot of spots all over the country where you just wake up in the morning and you think, wow, I'm fortunate. I get paid to actually see this every morning.
Hey, how's it going?
Amara
from Sydney, Australia, post on Facebook. I want to know how or what keeps them awake, especially at night, or do they take any special drugs to keep them going?
Coffee.
Just coffee and determination. I mean, you know, we only get so many hours a day we can drive. So after that, we have to stop and sleep. Drugs, that's a big no-no. We have
supposedly.
We have random drug tests, but there are some guys out there that do it. But
I just took a drug test. Matter of fact, I took a random drug test yesterday for my company. They called me and asked me to go in, and they got the results back, and obviously I'm clean.
Green maze.
There's a lot of guys out there that do choose that lifestyle, and they burn out pretty quick. They don't last long. A lot of drivers in this industry now, we don't want them out here anymore.
Yeah, I mean, I just took a drug test last week, as a matter of fact, too.
Were the drugs any good?
Well, they said I didn't study for it.
Oh,
you know,
no, you didn't pass.
If I'm going to fail at something, that might be something to fail at, I guess.
But there are illegal drugs out here that you can get to, you know.
Methamphetamine.
Yeah, a whole lot of it that's not good for you, you know.
Yeah.
And there's, you know, you have your experiences, you know. You have your times, you know. And trust us, over the, I guess between 50, 60 years out of all of us.
We've all slipped.
Now we slip, and it's happened to everybody.
Well, let me ask you, Herb, if you were to walk out of the truck right now, how long would it take you to find methamphetamines?
30 seconds.
30 seconds?
Yeah, it's prevalent in all the truck stops, but like I said, a lot of the drivers, the American Trucking Association, and all of us, we don't want it in our industry anymore. It's ruining a lot of lives, and it puts a lot of people in danger, but it's like every industry. Executives and offices, producers, movie stars, cops, there's problems in all industries, so I don't want the world to look down at trucking as we're a bunch of drug heads out here. We're not.
We have a question from Kim in Nairobi. She posted on Facebook. In Africa, truck stops are usually parking lots with bars and high numbers of women, mostly sex workers, looking for clients. Is it the same in this country?
Yeah, we still get some women that knock on the doors and stuff like that, but, you know, for the most part, most decent guys will turn them away and tell them to get lost.
It also helps if you just post a sign in your window that says, don't ask.
Well, one of the tricks I learned is here in America, the prostitutions, is once one of them visited your truck, they'll leave a wet napkin or a piece of rag or something on your steps to let the other prostitutes know you've been there. So when I pull into a truck stop sometimes, and I know if it's known for prostitutes, I'll just get a wadded up piece of a napkin, a toilet paper, and wet it and set it on my door. That way the prostitutes stay away.
It works for me.
I thought you just blew your nose and threw it out the window.
Yeah, well, yeah, all right. Well, let's get on the CB and see if we can't get some of the guys out there to answer some of your questions. Yeah, is there anybody out there?
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, we're broadcasting live from our semi here in Ontario, California, and we was wondering if you would answer some of the questions or tell us how you feel about the lifestyle of living in your truck and what it's like.
Well, that sounds okay.
Okay, we have a question from Carolyn in Kenya. And I got to get my glasses on my forehead. Says, I've always wondered how they manage to maintain relationships with family and friends, and if they're new in a new town every day. We have a question here from Carolyn in Kenya. She wants to ask you, how is it out here driving to affect your family, and are you in a new town every day, and what's it like to visit the country?
Well, I've been doing this for 40 years, and I've seen just about every place in the continental United States and Canada. Over the years, it's worked out well. I get home, for the most part, every week now and spend the weekend at home. I used to go out for 3 weeks at a time, but I've been with the same woman now for 25 years, and we seem to get along really well. We've raised 6 children.
Well, driver, that sounds good, and I hope you guys get another 25 years out of that relationship. I thank you for the response.
I have another question here from Priyam in India, posted on Facebook. Do you ever feel alienated from everything with all the traveling that you do?
Yeah,
quite a bit. It's it gets kind of hard. For those of you who are just joining us, my name is Carissa. I'm a company driver, so I don't own my own truck. I go where they tell me to go, when they tell me to go there. And I only get home about every 4 weeks or so. I actually just got married, so we had to stay out for 2 months in order to get the time off for the wedding. And it's pretty rough. I mean, it's good that, you know, we have so much technology now. We can talk to our friends and family on the phone pretty much every day. But it's different to, you know, even just being able to sit down with family and watch a movie, something as simple as that really makes a huge difference. So it's good and it's bad. It is what it is.
You know, I feel alienated out here. I don't have much of a home life. I mean, Herb's family's kind of my family now. Looks kind of strange, you know, a white guy walking in with a black family, but hey, we're okay with that. But, you know, I go over there and eat and have supper with them and stuff, and they treat me like family, and a lot of drivers, co-drivers have that.
We have another question coming in. Do truckers have no home?
I can take that one. This is Earl. I have no home. I have no address. Luckily, my ex-wife lets me use hers to get my bills and stuff. But I have no per se a home. I live in the truck, and I live at Herb's house when we're back east in the Carolinas. But it's pretty rough. I mean, you know, everything I've acquired is gone. I have no furniture. I just found out yesterday I let my friend borrow my car and he wrecked it. So, yeah, well, he won't answer the phone for 3 days, so I know something happened to my new car. But now I probably don't have a car. But it's rough not having a home. It's nice to walk into familiar surroundings. You have that, every home has its own smell. You know where you're at. You can walk in the dark.
Usually cigarettes and coffee.
Yeah, but now... Now my home is a sleeper that's about 84 inches long and 96 inches wide, and that's where I live now. And this is me. This is my life.
I kind of live in a truck, but I still have a home at the same time, because when I do go in, I go home.
And the shelter lets you come back that much?
Well, you know, they keep a bunk open for me. You know, they like truck drivers every once in a while, you know. Get us on the soup line and then kick us out.
They always keep that park bench open.
We've come up with a pretty good solution to that, I think. We've got a roommate who is, he's been really good to us. We had some really rough times when the economy took its first really sharp downturn about 5 years ago or so, and he took us in, took care of us. But so he's real good people, and we have a pretty nice apartment in Las Vegas, you know, full amenities, everything. We don't get to see it a whole lot, but it's good to know that, you know, when we go home, we've got somewhere to go. We've got someone there taking care of my snake, looking after our stuff, keeping the place clean. So I come home, everything is clean. There's coffee made.
We don't
and,
do the snake thing.
It's just beautiful.
Clement in South Sudan posts on Facebook, what is the need of putting all the pictures of your family at your desk when you know very well that after work you'll meet them at home? Guy, you've got some pictures at your desk. Why do you do that?
Well, you'll notice they're not of my family. Pat has banned family photos among the sales staff. The sales staff have photos of all the things that they owe money on, the house, the cars, things like that to keep our incentive. college tuition.
And this is Mike, and if you go into my office, you'll see my family photos are not on my desk, but they're all behind me, sort of overlooking my shoulder. But as I get up and walk around the office and then head back in, I'm staring them right in the face, and it's just a reminder of what's to come later.
That's right, and they serve to inspire you and remind you
and
that
he
you
works
need
late.
To have a good, formidable sense of income.
Believe in integrating. We want, it's not just business, as you can hear here. We have a pretty good time, and it's we want to integrate that family with our business life.
You're listening to parts of the live broadcast that World Have Your Say has done over the past few weeks as we traveled around the United States exploring if America is working. We visited a turkey farm in Ohio, an office in Pennsylvania, and also some military guests in California.
Brian, I know your job's was being an EOD, so have you ever watched the movie Hurt Locker about being an EOD?
I have. There's a lot of good things and bad things associated with that. I think the bad things was just as a professional, you know what you would want portrayed, and I think that movie's far from it, but it has a great entertainment value, and I think it adds a lot of things to where, you know, maybe somebody wouldn't know what a guy in bomb disposal, or the technical term explosive ordnance disposal, or EOD for short, really has any idea about, but now it's easy that you can just be like the Hurt Locker, and they're like, oh. So there's the recognition that gets out there, but the movies are great for entertainment value, and that's about it.
So you didn't have any Hurt Locker moments?
You know, I think every EOD tech has his own Hurt Locker moment, and I think there's times where, you know, we make fun of that movie, and yeah, you know, I think every EOD tech does.
And Brian, you've lost a leg and an arm, I assume, defusing a bomb which went off. Was that the...
Yeah, this job's a blast.
I'm glad you made that joke, not me.
Yeah. It takes a little bit for people to warm up, so I'm the first one to make hand and arm jokes. You got a leg up on me, Ross. Appreciate it.
I won't be offering you a hand later, that's for sure.
You got two? I need two.
Did you manage to watch that film, or was it just too close to how you got your injuries for you to take any pleasure or experience that you wanted from it?
I think what it was because I was very much into the professional side of things and the technical things, that, and how far off they were on that aspect, which is a good thing because you don't want other people knowing how you do your job, especially when you're in bomb disposal. You know, a lot of classified aspects of that. It was just frustrating. It was just like, I could serve my time better elsewhere. But good entertainment value.
Yeah, I think a lot of the Hollywood portrayals of military in general, you know, I mean, it is just a movie, and it is just a couple hours long, and it's Hollywood, and they're trying to capture, and they're trying to sell it for, you know, entertainment value. Some movies are closer than others, but for the most part, you can't really, you know, unless it's, I mean, even a documentary can't get as close to the real thing. You get a little bit closer than a Hollywood production, but still, there's no way you can put that into film.
Well, give us some advice, Matt. There'll be people listening to you all around the world at the moment, as well as locally on KPBS. What films, and I'll ask all of you this, which films get it right or get close to getting it right?
Yeah, I can't think of any off the top of my head. I don't know if anybody else has some that...
I haven't seen one that's particularly Iraq. I mean, I can't speak on Vietnam films, stuff like that, but it hasn't been too many films on Iraq or Afghanistan out. And like he's saying, the Hurt Locker, I thought was pretty unrealistic. And I know there's another movie out about some events in Haditha, which is just way off base and purely political driven, and just wasn't even a good production. So I've yet to see, and I think the problem is, as having military experiences, we know too much. So when we do see a war film, we just pick it apart and miss what the overall intent of the film was to begin with.
Well, Colin, put that film right. What was it like in Haditha? What are your most vivid memories of that experience?
It was a tough environment because there was a lot of just random people amongst a lot of very bad people, and trying to decipher that, especially after we just got done in Fallujah a few months before. We had that high intensity combat mentality going into a town that was also very high intensity in combat, and trying to deal with an environment where the enemy was in the shadows. And so you enter into a room, you kick in a door and enter a room that has a ton of shadows, and you see a silhouette in the corner. You have literally a fraction of a second to make that decision. Is this a bad guy, or is this just a woman trying to stay out of the fray? And sometimes you make the decision and it was a wrong one. Sometimes that means your life was gone or a life of a civilian was gone. And it's unfortunate that Marines were caught in that that political crossfire, because most of it was politics as opposed to being in making tough decisions.
Well, farming in this part of Ohio may have changed in some ways. One thing that hasn't changed is the Jones Barn, because this place really feels like it is very much as it was when it was built. And we've heard a great deal from the farmers who've come out to speak with us. And we haven't actually skipped being to see the other stars of the show, which are the turkeys we've been listening to in the back. So I'm going to stroll past these huge, this is lump charcoal you've got here?
Yeah, this is all hardwood lump charcoal. Comes out of Tennessee.
And this is where it all happens.
This is where it happens. This is the turkeys. We're amongst our Thanksgiving dinner is what we're amongst. There we go.
And how much do you have to invest in these birds?
Well, these turkeys, actually, believe it or not, when they hatch, they're $5 a piece, which is just, that's doubled over the last 5 years. The feed, we're looking at the feed bin, which holds 3 ton. We got our turkeys August 31st, 1 day old. They have now gone through 4 ton of feed, so we'll have to be getting more feed in next week. They do eat.
And they will be eaten as well. Yeah. When do you start preparing them, if that's the right word, for Thanksgiving?
Well, the slaughtering process will begin the 17th of November. And then once they're slaughtered, they go in ice water immediately. They go in huge water tanks. And then they sit in there overnight for 24 hours. Then they come out, they're dried, they're weighed, and they're bagged. And they're ready for Thanksgiving.
Some of them are pecking away at the feed here. And those of you listening can probably hear them rustling around on the hay that Skip's put down to stop the ground getting too muddy. This part of the barn's about the size of a tennis court. But they have much more room outside, don't they, when the door opens?
Yeah, they've got 2 acres. Barring storms like we had today, they're outside. So they're all range-fed, and they've got 2 acres to accommodate themselves, if you will.
Well, it's fantastic to see. Do they peck people?
They'll peck your ring, something shiny.
You should have told me that before I started the show with my wedding ring on, Skip. In the end, though, this October in America has been about politics, and for a few days this week just gone, about Hurricane Sandy, too. Some of the Americans we met didn't want to say who they're going to back on Tuesday, but all of them were glad to explain which issues will affect their decision. And it was a pleasure to meet them all.
I think Romney is the guy to vote for. Mr. Obama's tried, and it's just not working. It's just going downhill. It's not getting any better.
Yeah, I think it's keenly important that we understand energy in the broad context. For literally millennia, farmers have produced with strictly solar energy. And now we have converted to an economy that's extremely reliant upon fossil fuels. And we know that the supply of fossil fuels is limited. And we know also that we're having repercussions from reintroducing all that CO2 into the atmosphere that are profoundly affecting the environment. So I think that making a broad transition toward more renewable, broad-based energy is a thing that makes sense. And in that regard, I think President Obama has shown a good example.
You know, by and large, in my coverage of the election and policies, the candidates are fairly similar when it comes to their renewable energy policies. Governor Romney got high praise from the various renewable energy groups, the ethanol groups, and so on. There's some differences on their solar subsidization policies, tax incentives, that sort of thing. But by and large, there's not a lot of difference, I don't think, on the renewable side of things. What your question really comes down to, though, Ross, and the difference you've heard maybe between some of the folks here talking today, farming is by and large a bipartisan sport or a nonpartisan sport. However, farmers are generally very pro-growth. They understand as business owners what it takes to be successful in business, and they want a candidate whose policies will give them a chance to make money, be able to feed their kids. And by and large, those rural voters, almost 60% according to the rural study that was done, a poll a couple weeks ago, say Governor Romney's that candidate.
And as I, you know, analyze both candidates and from a farming perspective,
You know, you can't help but think of regulations, and we have regulations in the farming industry. We know they're necessary. We comply. But I personally, you know, get a little worried when we start expanding the definitions of certain things. A good example would be a waterway definition by the US EPA. So I get a little nervous, and I really start paying attention, you know, to those policies that start looking at expanding definitions that make it somewhat unworkable and sometimes totally unworkable from a farmer's perspective.
And I would kind of echo some of those comments as well. As one of the biggest topics that we've talked about earlier was working hard for what you want to get in, you know, get out of your day and out of your life. I'm not a big fan of people sitting by, taking the easy way, as Skip said, and just, you know, going along for the ride and hoping somebody pays their way. So, you know, from my opinion, it's Governor Romney as well, and you know, that's my take on it.
In my travels around covering Ohio agriculture, one thing that I've been hearing more and more of here recently, in at least in my perception, is farmers saying, we just want to farm. Get government out of our way and let us farm.
Dave, you'll love this. David posts on Facebook, I just almost drove off the road knowing you guys are broadcasting 15 miles south of me. Great to have you in Ohio. Ohio farms are where it's at, and I think a lot of us would agree that's the case.
And it's been striking, hasn't it, as each debate's been analyzed. It's been analyzed as much for the way that the men have presented themselves as it has been for what they've been saying. So you're all experts at this. What advice would you have offered Romney and Obama? What did they get right and wrong in the way that they projected themselves?
I'm Marianne, actress and writer and producer, and I literally can't comment on that because so many news shows have. But for me, this election feels like life and death. I mean, I'm a Democrat. I'm not happy with everything Obama did, but I feel like he accomplished a great deal more than people are aware. He was not his own best PR person. I feel like if he doesn't complete his 8 years, we are F'd. And that's where I am. So I'm going to Nevada this weekend to, you know, go do the last minute voting, knock on the doors, make sure that people get out and do the early vote if at all possible.
You're keeping me on my toes there, Marianne. Thank you for doing that. But I'd just like to hear an assessment of these two men performing, because that's what they were doing. They had to work on the kind of fixed grin they have to do when they're in shot and the other person's talking. They have to work on how they deliver their words and not seem too angry. Were you impressed just in terms of a performance?
This is Maggie Contreras, and if Capitol Hill wants to employ me as an acting coach, I am readily available. I would actually like to see just one time, instead of saying and covering a question, say maybe, no, I don't have a policy for this, and show some more humanity, possibly, instead of this sort of stuttering, kind of, so I can seem like I'm talking at the tip of my tongue thought process when it's actually all scripted for them. Speak on a human level and let us know how you are as a man.
I would say Romney's an incredible performer. I mean, he's kind of this husk of a man, you know, who kind of just gets
he's all performance
filled with whatever he needs to say. So he's actually quite a good performer, I think.
Thanks for listening to World Have Your Say series. Is America working? And of course, tune to the BBC World Service for full coverage of the presidential election on Tuesday. Needless to say, you can let us know what you think of the outcome through World Have Your Say.